Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Hashtag RealPod. I am very excited for today's episode, and I know I say that at the beginning of every episode, so I definitely have to come up with a new opening phrase, but it's the truth. I'm very excited. I love these episodes, and I love making podcasts, so I hope you guys are just as excited as I am. But anyways, today's episode, I did something different. I wanted to focus on a topic that is very popular in the news right now, which is SB 206. It's a bill that involves the name, likeness, and image rights of collegiate student athletes. I brought on someone who is an expert in this field and is also a former student athlete. So joining me today to talk about this will be Haley Hotson, former All-American volleyball player from Stanford. I did an episode with Haley, so if you want to learn more about her, it's super inspiring. She's got an incredible story. You should check that out. But Haley is, let me tell you why she's the best, okay? Haley recently spoke on a panel discussing this bill at Loyola Law School along with Senator Bradford. She testified in the state capitol in front of the California Senate's Higher Education Committee, as well as before the California Assembly's Higher Education Committee. And she's been featured on the Today Show and NBC Nightly News and quoted in the New York Times, all regarding SB 206. So she definitely knows her stuff, and I brought her on to sort of break this down and help me understand more, but also you guys who might not really know what exactly is going down. So to quickly give you a little preface before we get into the conversation with Haley, I wanted to give you some like SB 206 for dummies real quick so that you could be up to speed. When you become an NCAA athlete, which is a collegiate level athlete, and most schools are NCAA, you have to sign a contract that basically gives your name, likeness, and image to the school and the NCAA. So you can no longer benefit from your name, likeness, and image, essentially who you are as a person. So for example, at the most basic level, I had a YouTube channel during my time in college. I could not monetize that because I was a student athlete. I was a Victoria Garrick, the volleyball player, and that would be using my name, likeness, and image to receive money and be paid for that or receive benefits. I could not accept a free flight to go speak at a school about mental health because that would be receiving a gift, which is a free flight, because I'm Victoria Garrick, the volleyball player. So it was just, it's very hard for student athletes to reap the benefits of their success when they cannot use or leverage their name, likeness, and image at all. I mean, and these are basic rights. Like, I couldn't even leverage my name, Victoria Garrick. And so basically this bill is trying to take that clause away and give back student athletes the sort of ownership to do what they want with their name, likeness, and image. This bill is not saying student athletes are going to be paid to play college sports. It's not. Obviously, there's ways they can get payment and sponsors and whatnot from their name, like as an image, but this bill is not saying schools are going to pay athletes. So I just wanted to give you guys a little breakdown on that. The last thing I wanted to add before I start is, sorry, I'm just looking at my notes. Okay, here, I found it, sorry. Something to add is the four schools that SB 206 includes in the scope are all in the top 10 list of schools with the most NCAA D1 championships. So it's not just football championships, but all sports combined. Stanford has 123 national championships. UCLA has 118. USC has 107. Cal has 38. and you can already see the drop off. And so SB 206 affects California schools. So it's a huge deal that four schools who are very high in the ranks, let alone leading, are now going to be affected by this, what I think is positively, but obviously it's very upsetting to the NCAA that their top winning schools are going to be sort of trying to change their policies. Anyways, let's get into the episode. I hope that this helps you guys understand what's going on. And here's a perspective of two student athletes, one of which is an expert on the topic. So let's get started.
Well, thank you so much for coming back. As I was just telling you, your first episode was amazing. Everyone loved it. So if you guys haven't listened to Haley's episode, she just shares about a little bit about her sports journey. You should check that out. But I brought her on today because she is you're very much involved in the SB 206 bill and everything that's going on, which is awesome because you can feel like you've had a personal hand in changing the future for student athletes everywhere. But there are many people that really don't get what's going on. They're like, wait, does this mean student athletes get like to be bought cars by the school? Does this mean that student athletes are getting paid to play? So I want to clear that up right here on Real Pod. Thank you for coming.
Yes, absolutely. I think when we hear about legislation in general, people have no idea what's going on.
No idea.
But I will say that this whole experience of working with Senator Skinner's office has restored my faith in like government and representative government, and that these people that are your representatives, they care. They know what they're talking about and they're trying. So at the very least,
slight side note, have you seen The Politician?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So good.
Wait, I'm so glad somebody else has seen
this. I've watched the whole thing in 48 hours. Oh my gosh. I've been singing River by Joni Mitchell or whatever.
It's so great.
It's so great. That's what immediately what I thought of when you taught me about legislation. Yeah. I was amazed at how much those people cared.
Oh, it's so good though.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I literally want to watch it again. I watched the first episode like 3 times.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, it was so good.
But that's all. If you ask me about who's my favorite politician, I would say
Ben Platt.
What's his name? Hobart.
Payne Hobart. Can we all just like collectively agree to just like write him in?
Yeah. Election? Oh God, but amazing show. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. But so I guess let's just start with like, what is SB 206? Am I also saying that right? Is that the way that people are saying it?
Yeah, okay, it's cool. SB 206. It's changed names a couple of times, but the SB stands for Senate Bill 206. So for those of you that, you know, haven't taken a lot of government classes,
that's me.
Which is me as well.
Dumb it down. This is SB 206 for dummies.
This is also just like representative government 101. So I've learned a lot about how our government works in the last like 6 months working on this bill, but SB stands for Senate Bill. There are two houses in the legislature in California. You have the Assembly and the Senate, which is very similar to how Congress runs. Other states do it. Most of them do it this way. Some do it differently. So that's where it originated. Senator Skinner and Senator Bradford co-authored the bill, and so it originated in the Senate and then has to be approved by both sides.
How did you specifically become this involved in it?
So there's a guy named Ramogi Huma who runs an organization called the National College Players Association, and he's been working since he was a football player at UCLA in college a while back.
Shout out to Ramogi,
who I've worked with before, trying to lobby for things that have not yet gotten passed that we still want to get passed. But he put me in touch with Senator Skinner's office. They were looking for people, particularly women, to be able to testify.
Probably a female student athlete who could speak from experience and also was educated enough to hold her own.
Yeah, sure. But they were particularly looking for a female athlete to be willing to speak out. And I don't think it's any secret that when you're actively in a program and on a team, it's very hard to speak out because there are all sorts of potential threats to your ability to do that, even just something as simple as scheduling. And
I'm so grateful you brought that up because I'm obviously working on this nonprofit, The Hidden Opponent, and I've asked people, oh, could you send me a video in just saying, together we'll face The Hidden Opponent? And I've had a handful of people say, will this affect my eligibility? And I'm like, no. I'm like, we're not making any money. You're just supporting mental health. Like, you can totally speak up about this, which is just wild. At the most basic level, student athletes like are very fearful about what they can even advocate for.
Right. And I mean, for me at least, I went to Stanford. Stanford's in Northern California. And the first time I went to testify for SB 206, it was in front of the Higher Education Committee in the Senate. And so there were probably nine senators before, like, that I got to testify in front of. But when they go through, when you give testimony and something is heard in front of a committee in the government, there are lobbyists that also get to just, like, say what you, like, sort of yay or nay, whether or not they're in support of it. And the, you know, the line of people that were saying, no, we're not in support of this, it's Stanford, the Stanford's lobbyist, it's Cal's lobbyist, it's a representative from, like, a coalition of, you know, public schools in California representative, and they all say no. So there is also that threat. It's like, I knew I was there, and, like, the school that I was still attending was in the same room as me saying, no, we don't support this. But because I was no longer on a team, I felt like the blessing of medical retirement was that I was able to begin to speak out, like, while still being an undergraduate student.
I want to dive into that whole experience, but before we get there, at the most basic level, could you define this bill for me? What is it trying to do?
This bill, SB 206, deals with the name, image, and likeness clause in your NLI, which is ironically the same acronym as name, image, and likeness.
National letter of intent.
Yeah. So your national letter of intent, your name, image, and likeness, which is more or less that when you go and play in the NCAA, you sign away your rights. And there's no alternative to that. So it's either you don't play in college, which, especially for female athletes, like, there aren't that many professional opportunities. In order to get good enough to go pro in most sports, you need sort of your development within the college. So there's not a viable alternative other than to sign away your rights. And that monopoly has gone, it's been contested. So Ed O'Bannon's case contested that, and there have been others, but they've largely been more specified, and especially only pertaining to men's football and basketball players and your highest income sports. So this bill just addresses those rights in as they pertain to representation and media, but it doesn't affect the relationship between the athlete and the college in the sense that any compensation that they are allowed to earn off of their name, image, and likeness is separate from the compensation that the university might be earning off of, like, sort of team endorsement things.
Right.
Yeah.
So if, for example, if I were to have had a sponsorship from some company, I'm not, like, splitting that with the school. It's separate.
Right. And it's also, and then the other way around, if, you know, if USC is going to use you on a billboard, this bill doesn't require that you get cut into that.
Right.
That could be something that gets sort of developed in the future, but the way that the bill is written right now limits it to really just allowing compensation via basically external media and endorsement deals, as well as representation, both in the legal sense and in an agent representative, which is something for me that's really important, because especially when you're dealing with minors being recruited by ultra powerful people at universities with a lot of influence and money, it's always really bothered me that more often than not, these people being recruited, being groomed to enter the college athlete world don't really have adequate representation. They don't have people that know the ropes. It's really easy to not know what you're getting into, I think, in a lot of ways, and that imbalance of power is like a social issue for me. That's partially addressed by this bill.
I see. So are you saying that this would allow those young athletes to have, like, agents and have people who could help them with those conversations with coaches?
Absolutely. And there's a lot to be, the bill doesn't go into effect until 2023, first of all. So there's a lot of time for things to get hammered out. Also, the way the California bill is written at the moment is it only applies to basically your four highest earning schools. So USC, UCLA, Stanford, and Cal. It's a media deals clause that...
So no, UC Davis doesn't get this, UC Irvine doesn't get this?
Okay. It may become a moot point because there have been a lot of other states that have introduced similar legislation in the last week, and there is a bill on the table at the congressional level, and there's likely to be a lot of litigation and potential legal action that may or may not just, like, level the, you know, make it so that the whole country has to comply.
So for anyone listening who's just, let's give them an example of name, image, and likeness. So as NCAA athletes, our freshman year, we could not have, if Nutella, My favorite nut butter.
It's a great example.
Nutella was like, hey, Victoria, we know you love our stuff. It's good stuff here. We got a hazelnut spread. We would like to send you 20 free jars of Nutella in exchange for you to just like post and say you love Nutella. I could not post on my Instagram, hey, I'm Victoria Garrick. I love Nutella and go buy Nutella, because that would be using my name, image, and likeness to promote something else in exchange for getting something because of being Victoria Garrick, the volleyball player.
Right.
The thing about this as well that always gets me is like, when we play a college sport, it's so like the line of what is us and what is us as an athlete is so thin. Like, I remember I got an internship at Fox Sports and I had to fill out paperwork that said I got this internship because I'm Victoria Garrick and I'm a student and I had a resume that was sufficient for this, not because I'm a volleyball player and they want like athletes working there. I don't know. But the line's super gray.
And it's also crazy as far as I'm concerned, because student athletes are the only people subjected to this arbitrary delineation that doesn't make a whole lot of logical sense. If you are a concert pianist and you are playing at the Hollywood Bowl on the weekends and you are just like in a really advanced piano player in high school and you get a scholarship to Juilliard, nobody is going to keep you at Juilliard from continuing to perform in, you know, the Philharmonic and like go do those things. And you're not like, if you submit a resume and somebody's like, wow, this is really impressive. You've dedicated your time and your skills and your talents to, you know, piano playing. Like, you don't have to separate who you are and what you've accomplished just in order to maintain your sort of eligibility for, you know, your education.
Right. And something I want to do on this episode is I want to rebuttal a little bit so I can get your answer, because I'm just going to try to be thinking of what maybe someone who's against us would say. And I think that they might say, oh, but a student athlete is getting a full ride scholarship, so they shouldn't be getting other things.
So
what would you say?
The immediate rebuttal is it's a huge misconception that every student athlete is on a full ride scholarship.
Shout out me, walk on 4 years.
Yes, thank you. I'm actually so glad that you said that, because I sit around, these are the things that, you know, I sit around thinking about in my free time. Yes, I am that weird. But I sit around and I go, listen, I have so many friends, women's volleyball, popular sport, one of the few female sports that is more popular than its male counterpart. First of all, I think the men's volleyball teams are getting just royally robbed. They're putting in so much effort and time and getting very little in return.
They have
it is
no
not a well-funded sport at all.
Yeah.
And so on the one hand, you have men's volleyball players doing just as much work as everyone else, getting very little in return, definitely not scholarships.
When
that
she says that,
anything.
When you look at, for example, a USC men's team, I think they have, I don't know, 5 full ride scholarships. I'm not sure, but USC women's volleyball, we have 12.
Right. So there are these things called headcount sports in the NCAA that guarantee a team gets a certain number of full scholarships that are not allowed to be divided. Women's volleyball is one of them. On the men's side, there are much fewer. It's mainly football and basketball, and the majority of those full scholarships go to those sports, and the other ones split. But everybody's doing a ton of work. But so on the women's volleyball side, for instance, there are 12 full ride scholarships, but most of these teams are 12 to 18 people. So there are 6 people, maybe more, that aren't on scholarship. And I personally have a lot of friends that are national champions, multiple time national champions, that are walk-ons, that they are actually paying to be there. And they have this value that society recognizes that, you know, if you show up somewhere and say, I'm an NCAA national championship, in fact, I'm a 3-time NCAA national champion, there's like something inherently valuable there that people will recognize and applaud you for. And to not be able to leverage that and reap those benefits is really problematic, because every other kid in college, every other student that is good at something and has an opportunity to take their moment in the spotlight, they can do something with that. And student athletes are banned from doing that, whether it be just being able to like build who you are and build your brand or use your success and your moment in the spotlight to, could be something as small as just like being able to use that moment to highlight a cause you care about, whatever it is. You may be receiving some sort of compensation in return or not, but there are all these arbitrary rules that the name, image, and likeness thing can really come down on. at Stanford, lots of student athletes were inclined to start companies. And that's perhaps like a strange culture there. That's not necessarily super typical.
Classic Stanford.
But it is in the sense that, like, you know, college is supposed to prepare you for your future. And one of the things that kids in college are doing, people work, people start companies, people, you know, just start to get ready for their professional lives and build their brand.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, building a brand is a very valid and totally substantial thing that we can do nowadays, given media.
I mean, if every 12-year-old and their, you know, siblings can all, you know, promote boba shop number one via social media and get some sort of kickback in return for that. It could be something really small, like a 10% discount, but like that is something that could potentially disqualify you from a scholarship or just participation.
Exactly. When you're 12 and you have no idea. And the other thing is, like, let's at the most basic level, like I know a friend of mine who's a college athlete and has a YouTube channel, mm-hmm. can't monetize that, nope. spends hours videotaping with ideas, brainstorming, putting together amazing videos that millions of people watch, making nothing because you're not allowed to. And then another thing, and this is not my, I will be interested in what you think about this. This is not my, I didn't come up with this myself. My boyfriend, Max Brown, came up with this point, but he said that a lot of people think, oh, you know, let's imagine when we think of this bill, we think of the A player, the top person that's going to reap all these benefits, get thousands, get all this product. Max was like, let's think about that B or C player that's going to start seeing that stuff and then start getting active and wanting to meet people and maybe be a self-starter and catch on to this idea that we have to make conversations, we have to hustle, we have to create, we have to, you know, build more for our life than just going to practice and being an athlete. Absolutely. So it's honestly, I think it would inspire all athletes to start thinking about, their career, their brand, what are they working towards? Yeah. Because right now it's basically like you can't do anything but just be a student athlete.
Well, a couple points. The NCAA loves to talk about how 1-2% of people go pro. I also would say that 2% is pretty skewed into what sports and what gender those players are. So you've got
also,
a vast...
Also, when they say the NCAA, it's like, who else is there? There's not another, like college.
But they say that, you know, 1-2% of people that play college sports will actually end up going pro. And it's like, okay, great. So all of those other people, doesn't it make sense to give them, like, opportunities that would prepare them or allow them to use their own initiative? You're not giving them anything. You still have to go, like, earn it and get it for yourself.
Yeah.
But, you know, what about entrepreneurship, enterprising, like, just seizing opportunities, looking for opportunities? You've been lately hosting, like, clinics and camps. You can advertise for those now. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have a year ago.
Like, I remember my sophomore year, I was like, oh, I'm going to go back to the Bay Area. I'm going to do a Victoria Garrick USC Libero volleyball clinic.
Nope, illegal.
Great. Yep, illegal. Couldn't do it.
And, like, not to, you know, beat it over your head, but it's like, and you were paying to go to USC.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no, this is insane. Like, this is actually insane. Like, people work jobs because of whatever their skill set is. And sometimes you're working just, you know, a job at a boutique or a coffee shop. But occasionally people are working jobs that require specialized skill sets.
And I think...
And how are sports not a specialized skill set?
And the misconception that I think the population has, maybe disagree with this, is they're imagining, like, athletes are not going to be paid to play. That is not what SB 206 is going to do. What it's going to do is give athletes the basic human right that everyone else has to capitalize on who they are, what their resume is, what their accomplishments are. You know, why shouldn't a player be able to take advantage of their hard work?
Exactly. And if people are concerned, I mean, I think it's a bad argument to say that, you know, the only people that are going to benefit are the people at the top. And it's like, first of all, if you really are that 1% that stands to make, you know, bajillions, they're going to make those no matter what. So it doesn't matter to me if that comes earlier, because the flip side of that is also, by playing sports, you are inherently at risk of a career-ending injury at any given moment. I know that deeply personally. You know that. Like, most of us know that have played sports. And so why not give a kid a chance to at least earn back, or, you know, maybe earn back a little bit of what they've, all the hard work that they've put in hopes that it'll pay off someday, because it might not. And, like, the cards may not fall that way. And so I think to sort of gamble all of that away, is not necessarily the way to go.
In my mind, we're very convincing. I agree with both of us. Can you please pose the argument of the people that disagree and why they don't want this to go through?
So I sat in two two hearings in the California, you know, both the Senate and the Assembly. And at one of them, the opposition, it was one of the earlier hearings, and, you know, some organizations, the coalitions of the schools in California had sent what were clearly not their, like, you know, biggest in all the meetings sort of lobbyists. And what the senators and assemblymen and women kept asking the opposition was, are you guys turning around and going to your schools and asking them to make amends and do things to better empower and protect their students? Because I did not hear from a single senator. There were people that had, you know, qualms about sort of the specifics and how things were going to go. But everyone was like, I think it's beyond the point of, like, to not recognize that the NCAA is profiting. It's a multi-billion dollar industry off of an unpaid labor source, and then doubly denying that group of labor, those people, the right to even, you know, use who they are to further themselves in the mm-hmm. world. Like, they kept asking these questions, like, don't you, like, what are you guys doing to ask the people in power to make that right?
Do you know the percentage of how many kids are actually not on scholarship?
So I've been trying to do research on this for a while, and I keep tipping off journalists being like, we've got to get this. We've got to figure this out. Because what
it's
the NCAA,
be a movie in 20 years, trust me.
What the NCAA does is they publish their sort of overall ambiguous count of what's what, and it gives you the number of what your headcount sports are. But what it doesn't account for is they only give positive numbers, so they only tell you how many people are on scholarship or what the total aggregate, like, number of scholarships are. What they don't do is tell you how those are broken down. And so what I want to know is how many people across, let's just say, Division One are receiving an insubstantial scholarship. So something that really doesn't mitigate cost whatsoever.
This is intriguing. I bet it's an insane
number. It's a really high number.
This is class NCAA.
Because if you have a volleyball team, 12 headcount scholarships,
which is... We have three starters that were all walk-ons.
Right.
Neeson
and Ray. But so 12 is a lot of scholarships. I'm not going to say that that's not true, but there are plenty of teams that carry a full additional six players, so you have a full third of the team not on scholarship. So if that's, like... just volleyball, which...
And then, like, on the men's team, that's two-thirds that's not on scholarship.
Or more.
Right.
Or because they can split the scholarships. If every person is getting $400, then you don't have a single player on a substantial scholarship that's doing anything to mitigate the cost
that's
of attendance.
That's also classic. When I delivered my TED Talk, I pointed out how when I literally spent weeks trying... It's a TED Talk. I'm like, I gotta find the stats. Could not find how many students were depressed, were suicidal. I know suicide is a leading cause of death in student athletes, but we can't find the total number. We can't find...
No.
It was just an increase in symptoms.
Right. And so I am truly trying to get the numbers on this because they're not... I think it would be a time-intensive process of having to compare and potentially interview, like, every single athlete to try to compare roster numbers with, like, the headcount breakdown.
Couldn't you find that out by going to schools and, like, asking the coaching staff about their teams? I think you could just
They would probably be able to deny you based on some sort of HIPAA claim, but I think you can file a Freedom of Information Act request. I'm not kidding.
The law is fun.
So if anybody wants to, you know, FOIA every school in America, I support you. Personally, I don't yet have the time to do that.
When people think about the student athlete, they think, oh, full ride, football player, NFL, like, career made. And honestly, even if you are a full ride football player or full ride something, being a student athlete is extremely hard. It's a difficult lifestyle. You're a full-time student, full-time athlete. And so... I guess I just really get upset when people have this cuppet of, you're already getting so many benefits. I'm like, no, I didn't.
No.
I remember, I wrote down some of the things that this man, I would call troll, but I'm someone that, like, if I see someone being mean on the internet, I don't almost want to be mean to them. I want to be like, you really need help. You really need a nice little huggy, maybe a little milkshakey shake. But anyways, this guy commented and said, like, you got a free education. So I was like, okay, one, no, I didn't. And then he was like, also, you did not pay for anything there. The football teams did. The other teams did. And I was like, okay, now you're just jabbing at female athletes.
Yeah. I was informed my freshman year that the Stanford women's volleyball program broke even on a yearly basis. somebody fact check me.
Let's go.
But we broke even in, I mean, Palo Alto's not a particularly populous place. We did not, like, fill a stadium the way that a school like Nebraska does. You can't tell me that this only applies to men's football and basketball because, I mean, women's soccer teams are filling stadiums, tickets and endorsements.
You guys have Maple's majority full.
Yeah, well, and both of our sports have massive TV deals. So you can't tell me that you're not receiving money for my play because somebody is paying you to put me on, to put our team on the air. Right. Like, that is a business contract that the school is benefiting from. And we're denied a lot of other things. And also,
the kids that are not on scholarship are not receiving stipends for food, rent,
no,
groceries.
Well, and also, I mean, books. So I was on scholarship. My parents would say they fully paid for my education prior to me getting there with all of the club volleyball and all of the training and travel that was required to get me to that level. And so it's like I was one of the lucky ones that in some way maybe broke even, but also, what's a free education? I'm going to be drowning in medical bills for the rest of my life. Right now I still get to be on my parents' insurance. That expires when I turn 25. And that's a really real threat for me. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I struggle with all of these symptoms left over from the concussions I got in college. And there's nothing to protect me from that. There's nothing to protect every kid that, you know, leaves a rowing team with a lifetime of chronic back pain and fused, you know, back joints. Like, and rowing gets nothing. And half of them are Olympians. Like, no kidding. They're actually like Olympians and they're paying to go to college and they're banned from monetizing
and that's
their Olympic status.
It's a great point about the money we have to put in to even get to this level of being recruited. Right. I mean, you can't, people, and I feel bad, people DM me all the time like, oh, I'm in a neighborhood of where we don't have a good club team. Like, what do I do? And I'm like, honestly, I like can't respond to this because I feel bad. Like, it's not going to happen for you. You got to get on a good club team. You got to get a good high school team. Like, you have to be on a team that's, and then you have to, no, you're like, a coach is not going to fly to this tiny town in this random state. You have to be at Colorado Crossroads. You have to be at Spokane Qualifiers. You have to fly there, pay for those tickets, pay to be on the club team. Your parents have to fly. Like, it's a lot of money
it's
to even put yourself
money.
In a position to get a scholarship.
Exactly. And so for the NCAA to pretend like this is this, like, massive, you know, act of charity, it's like, no, we are matching you dollar for dollar at best, right? And I think maybe the one exception is high school football because they get recruited out of high school football. And so football's the one, football seems to perpetually be the exception to the rule. But, you know, put football aside because it's like, we know that America worships football, but how is this going to affect all of the other people that are not men's football players?
Right.
And what do those economics really look like?
And
it's not a free education. You're paying for it in some capacity.
And I loved your point of how the top are going to benefit no matter what when they get to the NFL, when they get wherever. And so I honestly, and I love Max's point about how I think these bottom people, like, for lack of a better term, are going to be inspired to, like, oh, how do I make an agency deal? Should I reach out to this company? Like, or should I start a YouTube channel? Like, they're going to start to become proactive rather than a lot of these athletes I know who just sort of, like, don't take their education seriously. They bank on going pro. And then when they don't go pro, they have no idea what to do. The other thing I was going to say is it possible that a school could, and I really don't know, could maybe, let's say there's a car dealership by a school. Can they arrange for, like, could they possibly be able to recruit kids and say, if you come here, all of our athletes have a deal with this car dealership and they all get free BMWs? Is that something that would be possible?
I don't think under SB 206 that's within the scope just yet. I think you could individually, like, that car dealership could individually sort of
reach out to,
you know, if you're, you know, if this bill is able to expand its scope, and other states are introducing bills that do have more expansive scopes, and I think that's definitely the trajectory it'll go, where it applies to more places. Let's take UC Davis, for instance. You know, Davis is not San Francisco. It's a smaller, more local and locally minded community. If there's a local car dealership there that, you know, is really supportive of, you know, UC Davis, UC Davis sports, UC Davis athletes, you know, whether you're a men's tennis player, female volleyball player, a swimmer, whatever it is, like, you probably have you have a little bit of visibility at the very least in that community. And if that car dealership wants to go, hey, this is great, this is mutual, like, we can't get Serena Williams in here, we're a, you know, local car dealership in UC Davis, but we've got all these wonderful athletes we'd like to support, you know, maybe we know some of them personally, maybe they grew up here. Like, we would love to support them in some way or another. And in return, we also get, you know, good press and good sort of representation and promotions from these people that have a window of being visible.
But you don't think that it will be a place where the richer schools, the wealthier schools will be able to recruit on the basis of being able to gift things?
I doubt it. It's no secret that corruption recruiting, like, has always existed. And so not to make the argument that it's like things are bad, so you might as well let them be bad. But I think California already has a massive recruiting advantage. And I actually think that I think the major advantage will be that if you can come to California and go get your own deal and make something of yourself, regardless of whether or not your coach is going to put you on the field or not. Like, you know, there are all these promises made in recruiting about playing time, about what position right. you'll have. There's nothing stopping those coaches from just recruiting somebody better for, like, no matter what they tell you. They could say, hey, Victoria, I'm recruiting you. You will start your freshman year. That is a promise that they do not have to keep.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go, hey, you know, I don't know, like, I don't know if my future really has, like, volleyball in it, but I want to play. I'm really excited to go to USC. And, like, oh, and if I go to USC, I can also use my time there to, like, you know, find some other ways to make this volleyball thing and all my effort and time monetarily worthwhile,
mm-hmm.
even if it's something small.
So in California, we've just passed this, correct?
Correct.
That was exciting. I saw that happen on LeBron James's Uninterrupted. Yeah. That was cool.
Very cool.
What does that mean? What happens now? I know the NCAA is threatening to maybe not let California schools be in the tournament. Is that true?
They're threatening. It's a terrible threat. California has more NCAA trophies than any other state. By far. Stanford Woo-hoo! Currently has the most. UCLA has the second. It wasn't very long ago that UCLA had more in Stanford. But it's in the hundreds for each school, which is so far
beyond. Is it in the hundreds for USC?
I don't think so. I think it's getting close. But
it's okay, guys. Fight on.
It's a very light, lopsided, you know, argument. And, like, you really want to keep your powerhouses out of your tournaments. The media is going to go, okay, well, we'll just cover that. You know, it's a free market. They're not going to have a problem with that.
It's also, like, think about how many fans combined the Stanford, UCLA, Cal, and USC all have. I mean, you want to turn down all those people from participating in your tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And then a bunch of other states have just introduced identical bills, some of which go further than the California law does.
Like about bribery and recruitment stuff.
And the North Carolina, for instance, just introduced a bill that ups the limit on stipend compensation to like $5,000 or something. And so some of these, like, are actually including more and more monetary compensation directly to athletes. But so if you're going to keep, you know, California out of it, but then if, let's say, hypothetically, 15 other states in the coming year pass a similar bill, that threat rings very hollow.
Because then you have like 15, 20 teams who are all, you're kicking them out.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I don't think I think the NCAA would, like, stand to lose a lot of money for themselves by kicking out, like, really high priority teams. So, like, in the Olympics, when we boycotted in 1980 something, you know, people didn't think it was a valid gold medal until Russia versus USA played. I think you would see something similar. It's mm-hmm. like if you have, you know, this, like, all-star team
undefeated in preseason
that, like, was arbitrarily denied, you know, entry to the Final Four, like, that's going to generate a whole other level of, like, media attention, mm-hmm. right? That people will be like, this is crazy. Like, they've been, like, you know, these mm-hmm. teams have been, like, kicked out. Like, there's this whole other story that will sort of emerge. But the bill has 3 years before it goes into effect. And I think that there's plenty of time for things to get figured out in that amount of time.
And historically, all of these schools are very influential. So I feel like people are only going to want to follow suit of, like, the powerhouses.
Right. And right now, I mean, because the schools make up the NCAA, if the NCAA turns around and says you can't compete, then the schools will band together and effectively do something separate. But there is a question of antitrust violation and price fixing. I think the NCAA is going to try to make a... they're trying to make a constitutional argument about commerce, interstate commerce. And I am not the constitutional law expert nor the antitrust law expert on this subject, but there will be, like, probably Supreme Court level litigation.
Going back a tad, when we talk about why the NCAA doesn't want this to happen, I know that some people are like, this would put us in the realm of, like, amateur professional sports. And I know that I've heard the argument of this name, image, and likeness rule was put in place initially to protect student athletes from having to worry about, like, agents and sponsors and all of that. But at the root of it, I mean, would this cost the NCAA a lot of money if all these Not really.
I actually think the opposite will happen. What is the big thing that
they don't want to happen? I really don't get it.
They don't want to lose control. That's my educated opinion, I think. I will say that the student athletes are being exploited, period. Like, economically exploited. I don't know how, you know, a meager 5% scholarship for somebody that, you know, is playing women's soccer or something where they split the scholarships, is a fair result for the $14 billion that's being brought in. Even somebody like a Christian McCaffrey, who's, you know, now a huge deal and was extremely successful in a football program, like, he was not getting anything. So he left and went pro early. But other people were making up millions off of, you know, his team's success, and they weren't getting a piece of that. And so I think, like, the fact is that student athletes are being exploited. And so if name, image, and likeness was meant to, like, protect us, like, the exploitation is there. And I don't think the civil rights reasons to, like, uphold that outweigh the potential. I mean, there's some risk, sure. But Title IX changed everything, okay? People were distraught about Title IX disrupting the system. They were like, this is going to be terrible for everybody. You know, it's going to hurt women somehow. And it's going to, like, hurt the whole economic system. It's all going to fall apart, like, doomsday, right? Obviously, that didn't happen. Did Title IX fundamentally change college sports? Yes. But is that a bad thing? No. And so I think that, like, in general, people are always afraid of change. And I think that that's a valid fear, because mm-hmm. you don't know necessarily how things are going to play out. So will this bill and similar bills like it change the face of college sports? Yes. Is that necessarily a bad thing? No. And so I think it's something to consider. And I recently spoke on a panel at Loyola Law School, and I was talking to a room of future lawyers. I myself am a future lawyer. And it's like, I think it's on us as legal representatives of people that may be agents to not be exploitative. But I think that there are also ways for schools and athletes and people representing athletes to work together to create practices that will not be exploitative. But it's going to be a growth process for sure.
I 100% agree with everything you're saying. I think it's super admirable that you have taken such a stand, and that must have been super courageous to be in that courtroom against your school, against, and stand up for what you believe in. But do I get, if I'm ever in a lawsuit, like, I'm going to give you a call. Do I get a friends and family discount?
A friends and family discount? I mean, I got to pass. I got to finish law school, get the degree, pass the California bar, which is hard, I've heard. Apparently everybody fails the first time.
You're a smart cookie.
So, you know, we'll see. But I don't know what, like, my future holds, but I do think that, like, as a society, like, yeah, change comes with responsibility. You know, it's on us to, like, step up. But I think that there's such an imbalance of power right now that it's time for some change. And I personally, like, I've seen enough people be so severely damaged by the way that things are, that to me, it just makes sense.
And by,
like,
people, you mean student athletes.
Same. Yeah.
And I mean, obviously we're both passionate about different right. things and the same things, but even with yeah. mental health, like, things need to change. I mean, just before we started at Haiti, right. like, so what is the goal with the nonprofit? And I'm like, look, I really don't know, but I see a lot of student athletes that want to do something. And so I'm just trying to band us together and we will figure it out, because it's right. just ridiculous how there's not and then at some point it's like, there's not enough counseling, and that's an issue. So then maybe we shouldn't have a team if you can't have enough people there to accommodate for right. mental health issues.
Well, and if the industry as a whole is making $14 billion and you have coaches making millions and millions of dollars a year with, like, 8 houses, I'm just wondering why, if the NCAA is saying that their priority is, you know, are the student athletes and the student athletes' education, why that's the way that this nonprofit corporation thing is allocating its resources.
Right.
It has the resources. It's just allocating them.
Right.
Not, there is a pie chart somewhere on the internet that you can find where it's 1% of the NCAA's income goes into medical care.
Mm.
1%. And fact check me on this. I'm not trying to, like, you know, say the wrong thing here, but
it's severe.
It is a very low number. And my question is, do we prioritize, you know, coaches' paychecks and shoe deals over the well-being of our athletes?
It is beyond comprehension that someone somewhere sits down or goes to sleep at night knowing about how much money they consume and knowing how many student-athletes struggle for various reasons, and doesn't just, like, distribute the money to have counseling centers and adequate health care and all affordable, like, everything. It's just... I can't comprehend
that. And especially something that effectively is a monopoly on a whole market, you know? So non-professional sports are owned by the NCAA in America. And there's no other country that has anything that looks like this at all. And so it is a unique American problem that we have this pyramid system thing where the people at the top get a whole lot and the many people at the bottom are temporary laborers that are no longer their problem once they're done. And so there's no incentive for them to really invest more money. And so somebody has to, like, you have to force the hand. And I think that's where legislation comes in and why we're seeing this being a big issue at the legislative level. It's because at a certain point, you know, people, either the free market can sometimes do that sort of stuff, but there's no alternative right now. And so that's not going to naturally really happen, unless forced.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, and this was very helpful and informative, and I hope everyone listening feels like they are now in the know. And also I hope that they're inspired, like, to use their voice, stand up for what they believe in. It's pretty crazy when you do that stuff, how many people either follow, support, or, like, want to help out as well. Any last words?
If you're in a state that has just, like, introduced a bill, call your senators, write your senators. If they're every state now, you know, we have technology, like, go online, figure out who your district senator is. You don't have to be a voting age to be able to do this. If you've never voted, you have no idea what district you live in, just go online, look up, like, your state capital's website, and you will find a lot of info. And there's usually plenty of information to ID who your representatives are and how to contact them. And I used to sit there, probably like all of you guys, be like, no way they ever read these things. They do. Go figure. They actually do. After sitting with people like Senator Skinner and Senator Bradford, two, you know, really incredible public servants, like, they actually care and they want to represent their constituents accurately. And so they want to hear from you. And so if you have an opinion on this and you live in a state, I mean, even a state that hasn't introduced a bill yet, get in there and be like, hey, I'm learning about this. And is this something that you would be willing to voice? Because chances are, I mean, every state, regardless of whether or not they publicly put forth litigation, is having these conversations behind closed doors.
Thank you. Let's do it, folks. Get those phones. Start calling.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode on the bill SB 206. I hope that this was helped you, gave you clarification, and now you can better understand what everyone's talking about. If you are a future student athlete, I certainly hope that you are excited because now you can start building a career at the young age of 18. And I also hope you guys enjoyed Haley. She's awesome. She's amazing. And you should really check out her story. She was on an episode of #RealPod a few weeks ago, so you can scroll and find that. And she talks about her journey as a student athlete, which is sort of one in a million, what she's been through and how she articulates that. And it's so inspiring. Just to, you know, give you a little cliffhanger here, Haley was the #1 recruit in the country, full ride to Stanford, Pac-12 Freshman of the Year, and suffered a career-ending concussion injury. So she talks all about that and what that was like. So please check that out and support Haley. That would be awesome. And also you can follow her Instagram. It's @HHudson. So big thanks to Haley for coming on the show. You're awesome. And also, guys, check out The Politician. It's a great watch. It's cool. If you're in the politics mood after this podcast, I recommend you go binge that on Netflix. Anyways, I hope you guys have a great week. And Peyton Hobart for president.